Hi there, and welcome to the 6th Annual Transforming Toddlerhood Conference. I'm so happy you're here with us today. I'm your host, Devin Koonsman, toddler expert and founder of Transforming Toddlerhood. I'm on a mission to dispel the myth that toddlerhood is terrible and to empower parents and caregivers to overcome the challenges of toddlerhood, nurture their little ones' development, and create confidence in their parenting skills. And that's exactly what we're here to do today. And I am just thrilled to be here with Renee Jane, founder of GoZen. Welcome.
Hi, Devin. Thank you. Hi, everyone. I'm excited to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us. I'm so excited to chat with you today. And before we dive into all things toddlers and fears and anxieties, let's hear a little bit more about yourself and what you do in case there's some people watching that haven't met you before.
Okay, thank you for asking. So as you said, my name is Rini. I am the founder of GoZen, and we create social and emotional learning programs for kids and tweens and, you know, for our inner kids, of course. I work with a lot of schools, therapists, and parents in trying to deliver information about social and emotional learning to kids and kind of meet them where they're at. So we kind of roll up research-based skills of resilience into animated programs, into games, into fun printables. And most recently, we launched an app called Teen Talks, where we actually have teenagers doing the teaching. So that is some of the work that I'm doing.
That is so exciting. I love it. And today we are focusing on the toddler years. And one question I like to ask all of my speakers that come and join us at the conference is, what do you feel makes toddlerhood a challenging and, well, oftentimes misunderstood developmental period?
Toddlerhood, what makes it challenging and misunderstood? I think I'll take challenging first. I think the shrinking villages and communities is first and foremost in terms of what has made toddlerhood challenging. Because, you know, one thing that I didn't think about going into motherhood myself, I now have an 8 and a 9-year-old, but is the physicality involved in having a toddler. They are natural born philosophers. So they are curious about everything. They're running everywhere. They're doing everything, you know, they're excited by the world around them. They love to learn. And that requires, there is a physicalness in getting on the ground with them and chasing them around. And so that can be exhausting. It's something I think that we don't think about. And I think that many of us will agree, you know, whether it was in the pandemic, before the pandemic, or after, that it takes a village to raise kids. And many of us don't feel like we have that village. And then in terms of their development and milestones that our kids hit, I think all of us should have the privilege of taking a child development course so we better understand, you know, this question that I think many of us get, which is this normal? My kid is doing this. Is this normal? And I'm doing this to respond. Is that normal? So a lot of us have this question about development, is what is going on with my toddler, average and okay?
Yeah. And that can create just a lot of stress, right? Like, and then not to mention adding in like social media and all of these things. And then it really just creates so much second guessing and stress. And I always say, like, the toddler years, while they can be fun and funny, they're also challenging and really downright grueling at times from both a physical and a mental aspect.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And today we're really focusing on toddler fears and anxieties. And would you say that fears and anxieties in toddlerhood is kind of a typical part of this developmental period?
Absolutely. So I think that all of us, you know, all of us adults who are raising this generation of kids, we ourselves need to almost reacquaint ourselves with emotions. It's almost like we need to take an emotions 101 course. So emotions are part of our humanity. whether it be fear or joy or gratitude or anger. You know, this is part of who we are. We come into the world receiving that information. And I call it information because fear is a piece of information, just like happiness is a piece of information. And we react to that information. So yes, absolutely. Fear is just part of being human. And it's in us from the moment that we're born.
Yeah, right. And so if it's typical to experience the full spectrum of emotions as a human being, and we're all humans, I think you're right. Like, there's this opportunity to really embrace feelings and emotions, and, you know, not have them be good or bad. Because don't you think that there's probably like this, a lot of times we some feelings and emotions that come up, we're like, push
yeah.
them away.
I think, you know, what you're saying about not having them be good or bad can take a lifetime for us to reorient our relationship as adults with feelings. You know, many of us grew up with this idea that we were supposed to pursue happiness, that we were supposed to pursue the positive spectrum of emotions, or what's considered to be positive. And that when we had these bigger emotions or these challenging or negative emotions, you know, we were either sent to our room to make it go away, you know, sent to a timeout or maybe even a time in. You know, we were given the indication that, listen, when you have one of these other feelings, we're not really comfortable with it. And so can you go make it go away? And then when you come back, then everything is going to be okay, right? So, you know, deep within many of us is, oh my goodness, if my kid is angry, if they're being negative, if they're sad, if they're crying, if they're fearful, I need to do something as a parent to push them through that or push that away. And really the work starts there when it comes to any of our kids. What does it look like to be open to our kids having a spectrum of feelings and displaying those feelings and navigating through them, you know? And it's hard work. It's harder when our kid is going and trying to relate to their fear or trying to relate to their anger. You know, it's harder for us to just, it can be easier for us to say, listen, let's make that go away, then okay, let's try to process this and navigate through it.
Yeah, oftentimes it's really asking us to go outside of our comfort zones. And outside of our comfort zones, it's uncomfortable. It's the unknown, but it's also the place where we can grow. And if we know one thing, kids are always have a way of, you know, asking us to grow, even if they're not asking us with their words, they're asking us with their behaviors and our relationships with them, for sure.
Absolutely.
So when we think about toddlers' feelings and emotions, how does their development really play a role in, you know, these feelings and emotions, especially the ones pertaining to fears and anxieties?
So when kids are born, they're born with a nervous system, right? And it really is a baby nervous system that is in training. And so we will start to see from very young ages, you know, even around 8 months, you'll start to really see their response to fear, loud noises, you know, when caretakers disappear out of the room. So separation, strangers, right? So all of these things can create the feeling of fear within, right? Which is sending a message to the body. And then the kids are responding to fear. And so these things are very typical as kids come into the world, as they start to go through toddlerhood. And then it's just a matter of teaching them how to relate to those particular messages that they're being sent from their nervous system.
Yeah. And I think that we forget, like, there's this biological component to it, right? Like, it's like the nervous system and the brain are all working together and learning and growing together. And so it's toddlers just go through so much change in terms of their brain development and just learn so much because they really don't have a lot of life experience. And so there's just so much growth, development, and learning happening at this time. And sometimes it doesn't happen linearly or proportionally.
Yes. I think what is really interesting is one of the things that we teach, and this is usually when, you know, a child is a little bit older, so let's say 8 or older, is this idea of the movie theater technique. And I think it relates to what we're talking about here. So what we will say to kids is, listen, your amygdala or the fear center in your brain has activated, right? When you're feeling anxious or when you're feeling worried. And you can feel the physical symptoms of that. Your heart might be racing or your palms are sweating, but you are not consciously making your heart race, right? Like, Devin, if I said to you, make your heart race right now, you probably wouldn't be able to. Or if I said, make your palms sweat right now, right? This is an involuntary response that's happening. But that involuntary response, that fear response, is not fear itself. Fear is the appraisal or the interpretation of what is happening with your body. So often with tweens or even teens, I will say to them, listen, if you're in a movie theater and watching a scary movie, your heart might race, right? You might, the fear response might be activated. But you are able to appraise the situation and say, okay, well, it's just something on the screen. I'm not actually in danger. And so I don't feel afraid, right? The feeling is more conscious. There is more choice involved in that. And so even though that's something that I'm describing that would be more for a teenager or a tween, we can bring this idea back that fear often, first of all, it's completely normal, right? Fear and anxiety are both parts of being human. And what we're doing is for our toddlers is we're teaching them, number one, it's okay. Number two, you actually have some choices in how you react. And then we can bring it down to their level using play, using connection to be able to teach them that. But the first step is allowing the space for it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And that step is the most important because we can't do much else with it. We can't get to the following steps if we haven't allowed the space for it to be there and for it to be okay in that moment and really meet the child where they're at. And so what would you say are some of the like common toddler fears that you see show up?
Fear of Santa. You know, it's funny because kids will say, I mean, kids, parents will say, oh my goodness, my, you know, we took Lucy to the mall and she was so scared of Santa. I said, can you imagine being that age and seeing this huge grown up, you know, dressed up in red like, with pink cheeks and saying, come sit on my lap. This is a normal fear response, right? So fear of strangers, fear of loud noises, fear of separation, fear of things that are outside of our control. So fear of lightning, you know, fear of thunder. These are all very typical fears that that are in the surroundings of a toddler and that they might have a response to.
Mm-hmm.
There are more than that, but those are just a handful of them.
Well, I like, these are great categories, you know, thinking about strangers, loud noises, separation, and then like things like beyond control, because it can be, you know, even things like public restrooms, you know, with like the automatic hand dryers, automatic flushing toilets, like, again, beyond their control, loud, you know, so I think these are really great categories.
And it's a message to their system that they're trying to keep themselves safe, right? They're trying to keep themselves connected to their, so when, you know, caretaker or mama or whoever goes out of the room, and they start crying, right? There's separation, a little bit of separation anxiety going on. This is their body saying, hey, you need to keep connected. You need to keep safe. You know, you need to survive, right? It's a survival instinct. So loud noises, all of those things, all of these things are, they're all healthy. They're all good, right? They're all adaptive. When they become unhealthy, when it becomes something to be concerned about, is it if we are not able to process those feelings. So a lot of times people will say, you know, what is anxiety, right? It's this sort of intense fear that we have of an uncertain future. But I will also say that anxiety develops, right? Maladaptive anxiety develops when we don't listen to the message our bodies are sending us. Feelings are pieces of data. They're pieces of information. You can think of them, you know, again, sometimes when I'm working with a tween or a teen, I'll say it's like a text message to your soul, you know, and if you aren't paying attention to what it's saying, it's going to keep sending, right? So it's super important for us, even from this age with our toddlers, to teach them to be open to listening to what anxiety or fear is saying to them.
Yeah. And so along those lines, like, how can parents respond in a way that empowers the child and supports them in listening to what these signals are?
Yeah, let's speak their language. So from a very young age, kids will be able to have dialogue with their stuffed animals, right? So let's create a character for them. This is sort of, you know, this particular step in creating a character, to me, it almost reminds me of, if you wanted to get in better shape, the first two things you would think about are diet and exercise, right? You would never skip those two things if your goal was to be healthier. So if our goal is to teach our kids how to relate to their fears, then this particular step should not be skipped. And this is really teaching kids that they have many voices inside of them, right? Teaching kids that they can relate to those voices, right? So they can relate to their fear. And one really fundamental way to do that is to take a stuffed animal or some kind of character and make that your worry character, you know. And in the GoZen programs, we call it Whittle the Worrier. That's our character, but it can be any character. And you begin to have a conversation, you know, even with your young ones. Oh, it sounds like, you know, it sounds like Whittle the Worrier thinks it's really scary to go in that room. Let's have a conversation with them. So that's a key idea. And even if your child is not verbal at this time, it's something that you can model for them and they will start to pick up on.
Yeah. Thank you for saying that, because I get these questions a lot from parents of younger toddlers, because, you know, we have like the younger toddlers, like the 1 and 2 year olds, and the older toddlers, like the 3 and 4 year olds, and the 1 and 2 year olds don't always have such a command of expressive language. But what I always like to explain is that receptive language typically develops before expressive language. And so toddlers are understanding so much of what
we say. And
we
know that as parents, right? We know that. We're like, oh, they're understanding. Like, we can see that they're understanding the language. Yes.
Totally. And then they can understand this as well. Just like they can understand, like, you know, oh, you can put that in the trash can. Then they run over and like throw it in the trash can, you know? So absolutely. I think it's just really something to like keep in mind, because, you know, even though they can't tell us with their expressive language, we're setting up those habits and our way of responding, and they're also starting to understand. So when they are able to talk, that's why I always say, when they are able to talk, that this pattern has already been set up for them.
Absolutely. Another fundamental thing we do with kids of all ages and adults is really exposure, right? And this is this idea of facing your fears, but facing them in a way where you're pushing yourself outside of your comfort zone, but not into distress. So for example, if there is a fear of animals, right? A fear of dogs is very common. Then it's not, you know, taking your kid and throwing them into a big dog and saying, figure it out. It's like throwing them into the deep end. We need to figure out where that space is, where they're just outside their comfort zone, right? And so maybe this starts with reading a book about dogs. And then it start, you know, the next step is playing with a dog stuffed animal. And maybe the next step is watching another person with a dog. And then the final step is actually getting close to a dog and petting it, right? So this kind of hierarchy is pretty typical in a therapeutic setting, but exposing ourselves to what we're afraid of, it helps build the circuitry in our brain, in our toddler's brain, that they can cope, right? Because one of the things that creates and exacerbates anxiety is this idea that you don't have the resources to cope with what's happening. And you want to teach your kids from a very young age that they actually do, they have it within them, you know, and even if that means kind of being in that comfort zone for 5 to 10 seconds or outside of that comfort zone for 5 to 10 seconds, that kind of exposure is important.
Yeah. Yeah, so true. I've even done this in an informal way with myself, with snakes. Like, I just do not like snakes, but it's so funny. Back in my nanny days, I swear every family I worked for had a little boy that had a pet snake. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like the universe is telling me, Devin, you can do this, you can do this. Like, you know, it's it's so funny. So, you know, this idea of really supporting a child and, you know, going outside their comfort zone, but not pushing them into distress. It can be hard for parents and caregivers because, you know, at the same time, we want to help them cope and help them work through these fears. But on the other hand, it's really hard to see a child upset, especially your own child, a child that you love deeply. And so sometimes we just want to fix it and help them feel better or make them feel better. And so we might respond with like, you're fine, it'll be fine, don't worry about it. You know, and can you talk a little bit more about how this could be counterproductive in terms of just supporting a child in recognizing their fears and working through them?
Yeah, first of all, let's be easy on ourselves as parents. I think it is very natural and a knee-jerk response for us to reassure our kids and say, you're going to be fine and trust me and I love you and you're strong and you're brave and you're, you know, these things. Now, there are kids that respond to that, that respond to reassurance, and maybe that lasts a little bit, but there are many, many other kids who will not respond to that. And what the reassurance does is it just makes you feel okay for a little while, and then you're back to feeling fearful and anxious. Now, as parents, this is hard work, right? All of the stuff that we're talking about takes effort. And sometimes we do just want to fix it. And sometimes we do just want to avoid the thing, whether it's the party or the crowd of people or the dog or whatever it is that's creating the anxiety, because we know that we're expending effort in order to teach our kids or expose them to the fear. So it's okay. We don't have to, you know, go into the mode of every single time this happens with our kids, we are teaching them this lesson, you know, whether it be a life lesson or we're exposing them to the fear or we're trying this technique. Sometimes we just want to fix it and that's okay. But this is not a long-term solution, right? In the long term, over a course of many, many, if you look at 100 interactions with your kid, if you're doing 10 where you're just reassuring and fixing, you know, it's fine. We all do it. But let's make sure that the preponderance of what we are doing is helping them develop the skills that they need to cope with the things that they're going to face in life.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and sometimes like even with our best of intentions, we might, you know, if we're just trying to maybe convince a child that they're fine or there's no need to be distressed or upset, you know, this idea of like dismissive positivity, you know, we want children to feel seen and heard. And that's to say, like, if anyone has done this, because we all have, like, no one's guilty of doing anything. I get on Instagram all the time, oh my gosh, I'm so guilty. I'm so guilty of doing that. I'm like, no, wait, no one's guilty of anything here. We're all human beings. We all want to, you know, support a child. And sometimes we find some things are less effective and some things are more effective. And so when we're talking about stuff like this here, it's like an invitation to look at a different side and practice something new that could be more effective.
It's hard to validate our kids' feelings all the time. You know, it's hard. It is hard. It's hard when we have the life experience to know that nothing is going to happen if you go open your closet door. You know, there is no monster that's going to jump out. And we sometimes just default to the shortcut and say, just trust me, you know, you're going to be fine. Everything's okay. But this child, their nervous system is telling them something else, right? It's activated and they are feeling that. So I think that one, absolutely, I agree with your point. There is no guilt. You know, we're all in the trenches. We're all doing the best that we can. We're all learning on the job, right? We are all a work in progress. And I think to make life easier, because there's so many different things to remember in the moment. And it really is hard when you get into that moment and your child is crying or they're squealing or they're fearful of something. And you were like, what am I supposed to do? What were all those steps? So I think that what we can do is we just have a few key phrases that we remember to use, you know, and that way it doesn't become so overwhelming for us in the moment. So one of them could be, I believe you, you know, something about this is really hard. Something about this is very scary. I believe you. I believe that that's what you're feeling inside, because our kids want us to know the magnitude of what they're experiencing inside. And I think if we have some of those shortcut phrases, you know, that we can go to in the moment, that can be helpful. But I absolutely agree with you, Devin, that there's no guilt here. We're just figuring it out. We're all helping each other.
Yeah, I always say practice makes progress, not perfection. And we are allowed to learn alongside our toddlers. And that is how it's, that's how it is. And it's absolutely okay. So I want to move on to anxiety, but I also want to ask you, because I get this all the time, like, well, my toddler is like, well, this is actually part of separation anxiety, I guess you could say, is like, you know, I feel like at least that when toddlers are like afraid of the dark, or they don't want to go to bed and they're afraid there's a monster, I think it really has to do with like separating from parents and this idea of like monster sprays, like, oh, I'm just going to spray for the monsters and they'll be gone or they won't come. I'm just curious what your thoughts are on this tool, because you see it out there a lot.
I think tools should be things that kids can use on their own eventually, right? So you can spray for the monsters every day for a week, but then at some point your child needs to know that they can cope as well. I think that, you know, using an imaginary spray on an imaginary monster is perfectly fine. Like, is there something wrong with that? There's nothing wrong with it. But what you want to do is take the skill that you have to spray the monster and transfer that to your kids, right? So this is about your kids knowing that they have coping skills that they can use on their own in the moment. And absolutely, it's about separation anxiety. You know, they want to be connected to their caregiver. You know, that is all about our circuitry. We're wired to connect to our caregivers so we can survive. And when you go away and it's dark, they're not sure that you're going to come back, right? So this is really like, this is the time for reassurance. This is the time for mommy, daddy, grandma, uncle, you know, whomever is caretaking for the child. I come back in the morning. You know, when you close your eyes and you go into this beautiful dream, you know, we're going to see each other in the morning once you wake up. And so those kind of lines, that kind of reassurance is really important in that period of time, you know, when they're going to sleep. And sometimes that takes a long time, right? So if people think it's not working, like, I keep doing this and it's not working, sometimes that takes time to develop, right? And time could be, it could be months for that circuitry to develop. So don't give up on it. But yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with monster spray, because what we're doing is we're playing into a very important tool that kids have in unlocking their imagination. And it's one of the ways in which they learn to operate in the real world.
And thanks for the reminder that this isn't like, these aren't one and done things, or that it doesn't just, you know, if you try something even for a couple of days and you don't see improvement, doesn't mean that you're doing it wrong, there's something wrong with the tool or whatever that you're trying. It might mean that, hey, you need to try it for 2 or 3 weeks and then see what's happening, if you've moved the needle at all. Because we want quick fixes, but learning and teaching skills is really not a quick fix, but it's a supportive, you know, it's support that will translate into lifelong skills.
Absolutely.
So when it comes to anxiety in the toddler years, like, do you differentiate between fears and anxiety? And like, what is that anxiety? How does it show up, or what does it look like?
Anxiety is always disruptive. You know, when people are using the word anxiety, this is disruptive to general life, essentially. My kid's not sleeping through the night at all. My kid is refusing school completely. Right. It is something that's disruptive to the family unit. It has come to the point where they just need to learn more coping skills in order to get to the point where it's not disruptive. Fear is completely normal, and anxiety is normal as well. It is our amazing mind and body's way of thinking about the future, predicting what's going to happen, predicting possibilities, and predicting how we're going to cope. You know, but when it comes to anxiety, we kind of lose the coping part. So is it, you know, the self-test you can use at home? Is what's going on in my home disruptive? Or is it just part of, you know, is it just normal milestones in fear? If it's getting disruptive and that can be a personal question, then there are things that you can do to make some changes and to give yourself coping skills and give your kids some coping skills.
Yeah. Is that the point where you feel like it's like disruptive to like the family and daily life that you recommend that parents and caregivers reach out to a professional for more support?
Absolutely. You know, but I'm also very realistic. Not everyone can reach out for support. I feel like this is something that we often say, like, reach out for, you know, like, you should reach out for support. I definitely think that everybody can reach out to a pediatrician, right? I think that that is hopefully a contact that we all have, and then you can get a referral from there. But I also think when it comes to anxiety, that there are a lot of things that you can also try at home. This might be controversial, like, oh my goodness, she's saying to try it at home. But I will tell you that of, you know, of the 33% of kids from the age of 1 to 18, right? It's 33% that are diagnosed with an anxiety disorder. Of that number, which is massive, only 20% ever get to see a professional. There is a massive gap. Okay, this is like 80% of people for a variety of reasons, financial reasons, access reasons, stigma reasons. That's a monumental number. And it's very hard to overcome. So there are things that you can do at home. There are skills that you can learn. There are, you know, conferences that you can attend where you can try things at home.
Yeah. And that's really empowering at the same time, because, you know, knowing that, okay, there, we have the power within us to have it go differently and the things that we can try. I mean, that's really empowering, especially when life can feel overwhelming at times when, you know, you might be, experiencing a child, you know, with anxiety. So that's really great. So this idea of, I feel like one of the most common things that show up in toddlerhood that's actually pretty developmental to an extent is separation anxiety. And mm-hmm. And then some kids, you know, have a couple of bouts of it once in a while. And for some kids, it's something that's like very persistent and shows up a lot. And do you have any advice or support for parents around that specific challenge?
Yeah, I think the first thing is to fortify ourselves, right? And knowing that we are doing everything we can, that our child is going to be okay, that we are going to be okay, because there's nothing like that, hearing that screech when we drop our kids off at school or drop them off with someone or someone is coming over to take care of them, or, you know, maybe we just need a minute and our child can't be without us. And then it's a combination of us feeling overwhelmed and guilty, right? So the first thing is to have compassion for yourself, to know that your kids are going to be okay, that there are things that we can do to help with the separation anxiety, right? But I think if we don't have that point of connection with ourselves first, it's very, very difficult to teach our kids some coping skills when it comes to separation anxiety. So there are multiple things that we can do. You know, if this is a, you know, a school or a preschool separation, if this is a separation with maybe another caretaker, like a nanny coming in, we can practice, right? We can practice. So I think that we use the word practice when it comes to coping skills. I think that very few people actually practice. So this looks like if you have a toddler, you know, so-and-so is coming tomorrow and they're going to ring the doorbell and they're going to come inside. And then, you know, mom's going to go to do this thing and then I'm going to come back. Let's practice what that looks like. And I know it can be hard when I go, but I always come back, you know. And then there are a variety of connection things that you can do. You have a photo, you have my t-shirt, where, you know, both drawing, you know, my kids used to love the draw the heart on the hand. So I would draw a heart, they would draw a heart, and I would tell them that we're connected energetically or, you know, invisible string. So there are a lot of those things we can do, but then we practice. And then we remember that our kids have the skills to do this. Now, the part where it requires some judgment is, let's say that, you know, someone comes, they ring the bell, and you're like, bye, I'm going, see you later, Joey. And Joey starts screaming in distress, right? So there's a judgment of, are they in distress, or have I just put them a little bit outside of their comfort zone? And you're going to have to play a little bit around with that, right? And you're going to have to be able to tolerate it a little bit so that you can play around with that and say, yeah, you know what, this is just a little bit of discomfort, and the discomfort will pass. And then they'll stop crying, they'll start playing, and then they will see that I return home. But sometimes it is a distress call. And in those cases, then we have to tweak what we're doing.
And whenever we tweak it, do you recommend like this idea of like really slowing down, like just like slowing the process down for them and spending more time in the process, less time in the process? I'm curious.
Yeah. I mean, so absolutely slowing down, one. Two, making sure as much as you can, and it becomes really hard with, I think, everyone's lives, but you are spending real connected time, you know, with your kids. And if you have multiple kids, just a little bit of special time for each of them on their own. So you're building up connection capital, essentially, you know, with your kids. So they feel connected, they feel that security. Yeah. And then if something like that happens, just really slowing down. And it really, again, depends on the age of the kids, if they are verbal or nonverbal at this point, in terms of how you then try again, how you slow down and try again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So helpful. So I guess as we're getting towards the end of our conversation, there's one more question. Actually two more questions I wanted to ask you. One is just, can you speak maybe to the adults and like, how do our own fears and anxieties play a role in all of this?
Yeah. So everything we are asking of our kids, we need to ask of ourselves, right? There are, I think almost everyone I've ever interacted with when it comes to anxiety has told me some form of, I think I've given it to my kids. You know, like, right? I think it's trickled down, whether it's genetically or if it's behaviorally, you know, I think that somehow it's my fault. So first of all, forgiveness. Is there a genetic component to anxiety? That's what the research shows. Does it really? And please take this in a compassionate way in which I'm saying it. Does it really matter? You know, the how of it? I think what's more important is that we have control over the things that we can do to mitigate what's going on, right? And that disruption in the family. So the first thing is that we need to work here. It's okay if you grew up anxious, if you were anxious growing up, if you feel like you're an anxious parent. The things that we're asking our kids to do in terms of exposing themselves to their own fears, we need to do ourselves. A lot of our fear is, you know, am I doing a good enough job for my kids? Am I messing them up even more? You know, and I think that's where the work needs to be done. Mm-hmm. It is very, very difficult for us to give the same compassion that we give to our kids to ourselves. And that is the work that needs to be done, you know, because that goes a very, very long way in terms of how your kids develop their inner monologue.
Yeah. And I think it also plays such a huge role in our experience of our children, our experience of parenting. That internal narrative just plays a role in so many ways.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, as we wrap up, is there just one action step that you feel that parents and caregivers can take today when they're done listening to support them in just moving the needle 1% and just really implementing some of the things that they've learned in the session today?
Yeah, I would love for parents to look through their child's lens, you know, because I know that a lot of us can reflect on ourselves and think, oh my goodness, I was cranky today, and I was, you know, this today, and I'm just overwhelmed and I'm exhausted. And I want you to look through the lens that your child is looking up at you. They are looking to you as a place of warmth, a place of safety, a place of connection, a place of comfort. You know, you are beautiful always. And even when we feel dim within ourselves, they see our light. So if you just reverse the lens for a day, that can go a very, very long way.
Right. That unconditional love and acceptance that our kids really, truly do have for us.
Absolutely.
Age. Yeah. So beautiful. Where can everyone go to learn more?
You can go to gozen.com. So it's gozen.com. And then if you happen to have some tweens and teens in the house, you can also go to Teen Talks, which is TeenTalks. So it's kind of like a TikTok for mental health.
Oh, love it. It's so clever.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate you sharing all of your wisdom and knowledge with us. And also, I'm very appreciative of the work that you're out there doing in the world and all the support that you're giving kiddos and their parents. Thank you.
Thank you, Devin. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. And to everyone watching, we'll see you again soon. Bye.